The enema is kind of our nuclear weapon before the worst possible intervention, which is the manual disimpaction.
Well, that is one way to kick off a conversation. That's Whit Fisher, the mind behind Procedurette, and the man you always want to run into at a cocktail party. He is going to be talking about some MacGyver hacks in the emergency department.
Whit Fisher.
Clearly, we are going to be starting with how to make an enema more effective.
Charlie, we're friends like you. Who needs enemas?
You know, constipation is a very common problem. It's even more common in demented patients or super elderly patients or patients with intellectual disability. And that's often due to the medications that they're on, their diet, their psychiatric status. Sometimes they're just unable to tell anyone, hey, I think I'm starting to get constipated. And by the time anyone else notices, it's out of control. Nobody wants that end nightmare of a manual disimpaction. It's painful. It's frightening. It's humiliating. It's disgusting for the patient, most of all, but also for us. It's a horrible thing to do to somebody. So we've all had to do it, and we all will have to do it. But it's best to know that you've really tried everything else first. Part of the reason that I came up with an enhanced enema is because, you know, one of our greatest weapons, a sodium phosphate enema, the problem is these take time to work. These are hyperosmotic solutions that draw fluid into the bowel as you retain them, that soften the stool and then give you this whole sort of tsunami to poop everything out. The problem is that demented or cognitively impaired patients can't follow instructions sometimes. So you squirt the enema in there, and as soon as you remove the bottle, they squirt it right back out before it has any time to start working. So if that keeps happening, you're never going to get a good effect from an enema, and you're on that downhill path to a manual disimpaction.
And it really comes back to the idea that you have to retain the liquid in the vault in order for it to do anything. And we all have seen this. We all know this happens where it just comes out right away, whether it was you or the nurse who inserted that enema, who applied the enema, it comes out right away. You know it didn't work. And you're like, okay, I guess I have no other choice. And Whit, fortunately, I work with residents. So when the enema fails, I can just tell them, time to go disimpact that guy. But I sometimes work in a solo shop and I got to do this myself. And it would be great if I had a little more success with those enemas, especially like you said, in the cognitively impaired, the people who have some dementia where they can't really follow those instructions. So tell me about the hack that you created to work around this issue.
Okay. So what you do is you get a few items out. I usually bring two enemas, two sodium phosphate Fleet's enemas. You get a Tumi syringe, which is that same old plunger syringe that we use to irrigate NG tubes. And you get a Foley catheter and some lube. Of course, you check the balloon on the Foley. Then what I do is I pour the two enema bottles out into the little kidney basin or into the Tumi reservoir that it comes with sometimes in some kits. But what you want to do once you pour those enema bottles out is keep that little orange cap because you're going to need it. The next thing I do is I put that lubed up Foley into the patient's rectum. Sometimes I'll put my finger in there first just to kind of nudge any poop out of the way. And once it's in there, I slowly inflate the balloon. And now I'm going to draw up that enema liquid that I poured out of the bottles into the Tumi syringe and inject it through the Foley lumen. So it goes through the Foley, past the balloon, and into the rectum. And you might have to do this two or three times to get all of that enema liquid in there. If it doesn't flow easily, just sort of rotate the Foley or reposition it or put your finger in there again for a second. But it should go in really easy. Once all that enema solution is in there, take that orange cap that you didn't throw away and plug up the Foley with it. Because the balloon is in there, it's much harder for the patient to expel that enema liquid, even if they kind of try. You want to tilt the head of the bed down, if possible, to let gravity do its job. And you want to leave that Foley with the balloon inflated in the rectum 10, 15 minutes. Then deflate the balloon and pull that Foley out and get out of the way. Because, yeah, often you will get spectacular results immediately. And sometimes it takes a little longer, but it does work really, really well. Now, is anything perfect? No, of course not. So if you try this and it still doesn't work, at least you know when you've got your finger all the way up there and you're doing the eagle claw disimpaction, at least you know when you're in the middle of that hellish, soul-destroying procedure for you and the patient that you tried everything else before putting yourself and them through that. And often the poop is a lot softer too.
This is a great tip, and there's a couple of things in there that I think are really important to restate. So you're going to slide that Foley catheter in. Don't throw away that little orange cap, like you said. That's going to be really important. When you inflate the balloon, you're going to do it gently. The Foley balloon's not that big. It would be hard for me to imagine that you could blow that balloon up big enough to cause any real trouble, but inflate it slowly and then leave everything in place for 10 to 15 minutes. And Whit, I'll be honest with you, even patients who are cognitively intact, if I tell them to try and hold the enema in for 10 to 15 minutes, very unlikely that's going to happen. So this is a really nice way to make sure that the enema actually has enough time to do its job. And like you said, if it's successful, fantastic. If it doesn't work, at least you gave it the best shot you possibly could by allowing the enema to be retained in the space that it needs to be retained in. The second hack also is about getting things out of orifices that aren't supposed to be there. And that's the insect that's stuck in the ear canal. I find that many people outside of emergency medicine and maybe outside of ENT don't believe this is a thing. They don't believe that bugs go into ears, or they think it's like an urban legend. But I can't even count the number of times that I've had a patient come in and say, there's something buzzing in my ear, and you look and there's a little creepy crawly in there that's still alive. It's still moving around. We have to be really careful of how we're going to do this to not traumatize the ear, but then effectively remove everything.
Yeah, I've also seen some really an insane amount of critters in there. Roaches, little spiders, which I guess are arachnids. I even had a woman come in saying, my ear really hurts, and there was a hornet in her ear. I don't know how the hell that happened. June bugs, ants. And some of these patients, they look like they're having a psychiatric episode because they feel this thing moving around inside their head. It's right next to their tympanic membrane. It's scuttling around. And they describe it as insanely loud and a horrible, horrible feeling that just seems so profoundly wrong. And they're desperate to get it taken out. But you're right. This is a living thing that's trying to get away if you're trying to kill it. So you don't want to go in there with instruments first. You want to kill the insect or immobilize it and then work on getting it out of there. Now, the big mistake people make is they try and flush an insect out with water, either to physically remove it, which could work, or to drown it. But it doesn't work well with water. And that's because the insect or arthropod respiratory system is really superior to ours. They don't have a liquid circulatory system for gas transport. Instead, they have these little apertures on their thorax called spiracles all the way along. And these are open into little branching air channels called tracheoles that are patent with air all the way down to the cellular level, where then gas exchange happens through a teeny tiny bit of liquid medium at the very end. So insects live in the wild where water is all over the place, so they're prepared for it. Spiracles, those big openings in their sides, have natural waterproofing to keep water out. So when an insect is like, oops, I'm getting submerged, they just close that off. Water has a hard time getting in, and they have this huge reservoir of oxygen. So they can survive a long time, even if they're completely submerged. So water alone is not great. There are two things that are great, though. And the first one, if you're in the ED, is to use plain old lidocaine, aqueous lidocaine or viscous lidocaine. I like aqueous because it just gets further down, you know, gets down there faster. And this will paralyze and kill the insect through lidocaine toxicity on all its little sodium channels, just like it does for us. It also has the added benefit of anesthetizing the auditory canal and the TM. So all of a sudden that horrible, scrapey, scuttly feeling is gone because the insect is dead. It also makes it a little bit easier to go in there with a curette or some alligator forceps or even one of those little skinny Fraser suction things and try and remove hunks of the insect's body. It rarely comes out in one piece, but that's a whole other topic. Usually, once the insect is dead and you get the big parts out, you can just flush it out with warm saline. The second method, which can work, is to use oils. And that's because those waterproof spiracles on the insect's thorax have lipophilic properties. So any oil will rapidly track into those tracheoles and displace all the oxygen and asphyxiate the insect really fast, in less than a minute. Where are we going to get oil? Well, we often have mineral oil as a laxative or as an enema formulation in the ED. So if I need to get somebody to say, hey, nurse, get me 10 mLs of mineral oil, and I just drop a few drops in the patient's ear, lubes it up nicely, kills the insect immediately. And outside the ER, if you're in the on a camping trip or something, you can do vegetable oil for this. That'll work as well. Once the insect is dead and you start removing it, the oils in particular will kind of turn it into insect pudding. It's just kind of like goop coming out. And often you'll be like, oh, I got a wing. Oh, I got a leg. But once the main body of the insect is out, just flushing it with regular warm saline will passively push out the rest of the dead material.
Well, I don't think any of our listeners thought tuning in to this particular segment, they were going to get an entomology lesson, but very nice to know exactly how it is that insects actually breathe and make sense of why we don't want to try and drown them with water. I also, obviously, putting water into a person's ear can be very uncomfortable in and of itself. So something to avoid for sure. I love the lidocaine approach for exactly what you said. Not only does it kill the insect very quickly, it also anesthetizes the ear and makes everything else simpler to do. But I like having the backup solution, especially when you're not in the emergency department and you have maybe a kid or somebody else that you know that has one of these things go in and you want to avoid going to the emergency department and having another option that works really well. So oil as a backup, but lidocaine is definitely my go-to. And I've used all the different approaches you mentioned to actually removing the bug. I find the Fraser suction works really well as long as you are gentle with it. And the Fraser suction is the one that's got like the little angle on it that they use for a lot of ENT procedures. It's got a good amount of suction, but it's really, really skinny. And so it's easy to manipulate it into the ear and suck the bug out. And obviously make sure that after you think you've gotten everything out, that you take a good look and make sure you've actually cleared the canal. Let me ask you a question along with this. When you remove it, do you usually send these patients home with some antibiotic ear drops as like a prophylactic kind of situation? Or is that not really necessary?
You know, I usually don't, unless there's some type of visible injury inside the ear, which there almost never is. I just say, no, I think you're going to be fine. I might give them, you know, tell them, use one of those little over-the-counter earwax irrigation bulbs, just in case there's a wing or two in there that we forgot. You know, if I was going to asphyxiate an insect in the field with vegetable oil, I would probably make sure that the child does go to the ER to make sure that, first of all, it was an insect in there and not a pebble, and that all of it is removed. You know, insects run around on our skin all the time and don't give us infections. I don't think they're super likely to do it in the ear. And the Fraser suction is super useful. It's what most people recommend. I'm always a little bit terrified of it because I just think I'm going to suck out the patient's TM or something, but I know that it works, so.
They are pretty aggressive suctions, it's true. That's why you really do have to be gentle when you're using that. Just like everything else we talked about today, you got to be a little gentle.
Summary.
And that kind of wraps us up for this segment with some really good tips here. I particularly like the one about how to do that retention enema with the Foley catheter. I think that's going to be really helpful for a lot of folks who have run into this problem over and over again, where the patient just can't keep that enema in place. And I'm not going to say that it's going to avoid all manual disimpactions, but I bet it's going to reduce a lot of those manual disimpactions that we had to do before. And then again, some good tips on removing the bug. Make sure to kill it first. Don't think you can drown it with water. And then use one of these tips, either the Fraser suction or a Q-tip to get the bug actually out of there. Whit, I can't wait to have you back on for more of these. Since you did send me so many of these tips, we're just going to pick two more and get you on next time to do another couple of these MacGyver workarounds.
Excellent. And you can save that enema trick for Saturday night as well.
All right, Whit. Can't wait to have you back on later.
Okay. Big smiles. And thanks again. Bye-bye.
Whit Fisher.